are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Tweet nothing but Rays games, like live tweets on the Rays, rather than giving like actual fantasy analysis, or what are you really doing?
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I honestly don't care. The Yankees could go 0-162, and as long as I had a good fantasy year, I'd still wake up smiling.
Yeah, no saves from Chapman, then, I suppose.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I guess United has an app on their phone.
Yeah,
and it said the update on it was they added a new drag and drop feature.
Who cares who wins and loses as long as my team does well?
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome in to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. This is episode 255. And it's another prospect show. I am your host, Mike Werner. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. And with me, as usual, for the prospect show is Matt Thompson, our lead prospect analyst. Matt, how's it going, buddy?
Good, man. I'm just drowning in all this baseball, man. I don't know if I'm anything like you guys. I got a game on the TV, game on the laptop, MILB TV on the phone and the laptop or the iPad. I think what I mentioned in our little restart here, I think the closest thing I could think of is it's kind of like March Madness, the first couple of days when you're switching back and forth between four different channels trying to find the best game. It's pretty much been my life this whole week, and it's been great, actually.
It's a lot. It really is. When we're doing all of the analysis in the off season on all these players and we just don't get to see any baseball, we're just trying to predict the future and we're just rearing for everything to come back. And then once spring training is over and the regular season starts, it's just an overwhelming amount of baseball in a short amount of time. And you just try and digest as much as you can. And, you know, there's really the big problem for fantasy is everybody wants to draw conclusions after a very short amount of time. And
yeah,
it's
right.
That's not something that you would
and
like to do.
Then the new pitch tracking system, throwing all the velocity readings off. Like, I don't even know what to do with myself anymore.
Yeah, it's really weird. When I see, even to this date, when I see Charlie Morton out there throwing 95, 96, I just can't really get on board with that. I just, I know that it's somewhat legitimate, but at the end of the day, I think that it's just too high in terms of the pitch tracker and, what it's giving in terms of the velocity to players and such. So that's a completely different topic. With us, as always, as well, is Andy Anderson. Andy, how's it going, man?
Things are pretty great. I love being drowned with baseball. It's so much fun. In fact, today I got to give a little baseball science lesson to one of our other Friends with Fantasy Benefits members. It was really a good time. And I'm back to doing that thing where I'm rooting against teams I want to do well, and it's all because of fantasy. So who cares? Who cares who wins and loses as long as my team does well?
I think me and Mike are on the same page as this. I root for the Cardinals over my fantasy team, and I think Mike's for the Rays over his fantasy team. But the gap is getting closer for me because I'm so invested in my fantasy teams now, all that draft prep that I'm kind of pushing my Cardinals fandom to the limit there.
Yeah, I honestly don't care. The Yankees could go 0-162, and as long as I had a good fantasy year, I'd still wake up smiling.
Yeah, no saves from Chapman, then, I suppose.
I will always be Rays number one, and then my fantasy team second. It's not close. It's a landslide. If somebody put a gun to my head and was like, "You can play fantasy baseball, and there's still going to be 30 teams in the major leagues. We're just going to cut the Rays out, and we're going to put a new team in, and you will win every league that you participate in, but you just will never have the Rays again," I would 100% pick the Rays side each and every day of the week.
That's how I am, too. Yeah.
So that's just the way I am. But I actually had a guy on Twitter ask me, because obviously he must not have been following me for a long time, but he asked me, he's like, "Are you a Rays guy first, and you just tweet nothing but Rays games, like live tweets on the Rays, rather than giving like actual fantasy analysis, or what are you really doing?" And I was like, I do it a little bit.
Stick to fantasy, bro. Stick to fantasy, bro.
So I felt a little weird there, but
if you're listening to this and I'm talking about you, I promise I tweet about other things other than the Rays. You caught me at a bad time. Alex Smith was stealing bases. He was flying around.
Buddy, pitching looks good for you, man, except for today's little meltdown. But
yeah, speaking about the Yankees a little bit, Andy, the Yankees have pounded on the Rays the last few days. I thought we were going to get a W today, but unfortunately, you know, Blake Snell, after looking pretty solid for four innings, decided that he wanted to not have a release point anymore, and it just went everywhere, and, you know, it kind of spiraled out of control from the fifth inning on. But, you know, the Rays have been all right this year. They're a little bit over 500, so I'll take that at the beginning of the season any day.
Yeah, it's especially with Snell, who I've actually always really liked. I like the left-hand power. I like the skinny frame. I like the movement that he generates. I like the fastball and the changeup 1-2 that he has. But, you know, we got to remember, he's extremely young. But he is in one of the best systems to be a young pitcher in. So I like him. I actually just traded him in a league of mine. But I'm not, you know, ready to give him any sort of praise above a, you know, 3 or 4 fantasy starter.
You know, what's funny is the Rays during the Blue Jays series, I think Tulowitzki and Souza, yeah, they got into it at second base because Souza was coming in hard on a slide to break up a double play, and they started jawing at each other. So both benches cleared. And the first cut that the Rays camera guys went to was Blake Snell on the field, like in the group. And like, he's just the least intimidating figure that the Rays have. He looks like legitimately 19 years old.
He's the guy you want your daughter to date, because you're like, okay, I could break you in half if I had to. So you're all right.
Yeah, he's sweet. He's a sweet guy.
And you're a baseball player too. So you make some money.
Yeah, we'll take it. We'll take it. Anyways, sorry about missing last week. I've been on a crazy work tear. If you don't follow me on Twitter, I got a promotion, so I've been just getting crushed at work, pretty much day and night working. So sorry about missing last week, Andy. I know you also missed as well, but we're going to be back on a regular schedule here. There may be some times where I miss, but hopefully we keep things somewhat consistent for you guys. In the meantime, we're here today, and you know, hopefully that stays the same as we go through here. You can follow Andy on Twitter, @AAndersonFWFB. You can follow Matt on Twitter, @MDTompFWFB. And today we're just going to kind of go through some kind of starts of the season, hot, cold, a few other guys. We got a few players that people were interested in on Twitter that we're going to cover. There's going to be a lot of guys we're covering, but we're not going to go super in-depth on a lot of them just because we're not idiots. It's the first week of the season, and we're not trying to, you know, have an overreaction on things that – ultimately don't matter right now. But we do want to kind of glean a few things from what's going on recently, and you know, a few guys in particular. This is just something that's ongoing that we want to give a little bit more of our takes on for the future. So without further ado, before we start, actually, I do want to continue to reiterate, please rate and review the show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, any of the podcast aggregators. We are going to continue, at least for the next few weeks, to choose a rate and review that we like, or we're going to just pick it out of a random draw, whichever, and you will win some free FWFB swag. So make sure that you get those rates and reviews in. Again, I cannot tell you enough or reiterate enough how much they really mean to us. So please continue to get those on in and help us out. Now, without further ado, let's start this thing off. So Rhett Soderberg, somebody that I consider to be one of the best FWFB fans that we have. He asked us about Byron Buxton. I think that Buxton in general is a guy that is just,
yeah, it's a hot button issue, man.
Not just a hot button issue. I think a lot of people were just really banking on what he did in the month of September last year. I mean, he has ups and downs, and then in the month of September, he ends up blasting 7 home runs. He hit .277. Mind you, the contact rate was still at 63% in those 94 at-bats, so really wasn't that great. But the Twins, once again, I just don't see them as a team that knows what they're doing with their prospects. A guy in Buxton that just got fast-tracked through the minor leagues, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, last year he got 49 games in AAA, and the year before that in 2015 got 13 games. So total of 268 plate appearances in AAA, really not that many in AA either. He's still a young guy, but I'll shoot it to you first, Matt. At 23 years old, what we've seen from Byron Buxton to this point, which is, I think, for his career, he's hit .212. His contact rate is at 61%. And this is parts of 3 major league seasons now, including 2017's 30 at-bat sample size and 130 at-bats in 2015 as well. But all in all, I'm taking a really long time to ask you, is this just the beginning of a Jurickson Profar type trend with him as the former number one prospect, or is there anything that we can glean positively right now with Byron Buxton?
It's hard to find positives now. The best positive you can find is the defense, which doesn't help us in the fantasy realm, but he's an all-world center fielder. Stats to pile on to the Buxton thing. 30 plate appearances this season in over seven games is carrying a 56.7% strikeout rate. That doesn't play. He leads the league in swing and misses with 32 of them, and he swings and misses 44% of the time, obviously, like I said, when he does swing the bat, and that's atrocious numbers. It's really hard to gauge him. Obviously, he's not even using the speed. Zero stolen bases. I believe he has zero stolen base attempts also. Looking at this now, he does. Zero attempts. I mean, you drafted him for the steal upside, and he hasn't even attempted a stolen base all week because he can't get on base. And I think that obviously he can't steal first base, old adage. You've heard that before. One walk, that's not good. He's got one walk and two hits this year. One of them is a double. So I'm a little bit worried about Buxton for this year. It's a really hard situation. I do not think you can cut him yet. I think in 12 to 15 teamers, you have to stick him on the bench for another week or so and see how it goes. I mean, you did pay a hefty price for him when you drafted him. He's probably about a, what, 7th, 8th round pick, 9th round pick in formats like that.
He went 140 overall, which puts him in 10 teamers, a 14th round pick. 12 teamers, about a 12th round pick. I saw him earlier. I also saw him go later, but regardless, he went pretty high.
Yeah, so you can't drop him now. I mean, I would send some feeler offers out for him. Maybe if you know somebody that's still in on Buxton, don't ask for anything major. Maybe get a serviceable starting pitcher that's going to, you know, not kill you anyway. It's a really rough situation. I think you just have to hold and bench him. And over long term, I'm a little bit worried. I don't like how the Twins handled him this year. I mean, batting him third opening day and for a couple of days, I mean, come on. I mean, I know that shouldn't mean much, spot in the batting order, yada, yada, but I think it puts a lot of pressure on him that he doesn't need. And what are the Twins playing for? Obviously, no projection system in the world has them making the playoffs this year, or even sniffing contention in the second half of the year. Why not just hit Buxton 7th, 8th, 9th, let him play every day and just – but, I mean, now I wouldn't – like you said, you hit it on the minor league at-bats, triple-A at-bats, I could see demotion coming in the future. If he gets demoted, you can drop him and I'll redraft.
Andy, thoughts on Byron Buxton?
So you heard a lot of negative, and though I want to echo that because a lot of that is negative and true, I want to point out the two positives when it comes to Buxton. Buxton, since 2013, has been a top 30 prospect, like I said, since 2013. So we've known about him for a while now. He's always had the pedigree. We've always said plus speed with power upside. That has been a calling card of his since, like I said, 2013. So the two positives for Buxton. The first is he's going to play every day. Like Matt said, the Twins, they're not, you know, they know that they're probably not going to win as good as Sano does, and Sano owners will tell you there's no chance that they make it. So I think that he gets an extended look. It doesn't really make sense to use an option on him personally, just because he'll go back down to AAA, and if he does well, then he'll just get sent back up. So, and you don't want to move guys up and down like that, a la Luis Giolito last year. So he is going to get an extended look, and, you know, an old adage in baseball is pitching does well in the beginning and batters do well in the summer. So this could just be a winter slow start. We've never really seen him play a full year, so we've never seen him deal with a slump in the big leagues and then come back up in the summer and do well. We saw him slump, then get sent down, then come back up and have a strong finish. This is all part of the growing process. At 23, he's still young. So I am benching him in all my leagues, and I would suggest everyone to do so until I can see more plate discipline, more extra base hits, some stolen base opportunity. But for all of the bad that we can say about Buxton, there is still so much upside there.
I'm it's back and forth with me. I will say this, in redraft, I'm not buying because I'm just
not going to wait for him to do that.
I'm not going to wait for him to get better. I don't have time to wait multiple months or the whole season for him to have a good September again, whatever it might be. So in redraft, I'm out. If he ends up having a really strong second half, then that's awesome. And, you know,
I'm sorry for, you know, telling you guys to not have him. But at the end of the day, I think that this does present a buying opportunity in Keeper Dynasty. But I have a feeling that if you're in Keeper Dynasty, whoever does own him is willing to kind of hold on, because they also probably are not idiots, and they're not going to give away a former number one prospect and a guy that has elite tools, all especially at the lowest cost possible. Now, with that said, this is just becoming a problem with Buxton. Does he have the pedigree? Does he have a massive amount of tools? Absolutely, and that's certainly intriguing from a fantasy perspective. Minnesota has been a team that in the past has liked to run. They were close to top 10 in stolen base attempts per game last season. I can see that repeating again this year, especially, you know, with a few guys on roster that can steal some bases, not a massive high upside stealing group there, but they do have guys that can't have the potential to do that. But at the end of the day, I just, in Keeper Dynasty, I'd be trying to buy as low as possible. But if you can't buy low, then I wouldn't do it. You know, it's just kind of, if somebody's willing to part ways for a low cost, I'm okay with it. I'm not completely out long term. I think that he still has a high amount of skills. Hopefully the strikeout rate is what everybody's looking at here, and hopefully that can kind of get in check a bit. But this, I think, all starts off with the Minnesota Twins' inability to treat their prospects correctly and to bring them up in the right way. The way that Buxton has been handled, and I think that this has been something that's been talked about not just by me or you guys on the show, but just by other friends with Fantasy Benefits, contributors, just other people in the industry, is the Twins have just not managed him well. And when you have an organization that has not been hitting on a lot of their elite stars, or not stars, but a lot of their elite prospects, and have been just derailed in terms of wins and losses for the last, you know, seemingly, what, 10 years at this point, it doesn't give a lot of positivity. With that said, they do have a lot of talent in that big three between Kepler, Sano, and Buxton, that if they did turn it around, and it looks like Sano is starting to do that, then maybe they can kind of get a little bit better over time. But it's really hard with somebody like Buxton when you have a team and an organization in the Twins that have mishandled him in such a way that it really makes you second guess things. But from a fantasy perspective, you can be okay with the strikeouts, because we've seen players with a bad strikeout rate be very, very serviceable in fantasy. We even saw a guy last year in Melvin Upton create a top 40 outfield season on the player rater just based on what he did in the stolen base and home run categories alone. And despite how bad Buxton was last year in the strikeout rate at 60%, or the contact rate at 60%, in 300 at-bats, he still had a 10-10 season in terms of home run stolen bases. So even if he does have a terrible year in batting average this season, you could certainly see him go 15-15, 15-20 this year and spark, you know, positive value at the end of the day.
Yeah, I guess I agree with a lot of what you said. I mean, but how much of this, yeah, obviously the Twins are having a tough time developing players, but how much of this is Buxton? I mean, making contact is the basic, you know, offensive tool. And I mean, yeah, he has struck out a little bit higher than average throughout his, you know, brief pro career before this year, especially, and then in the minor leagues even too. But I mean, his OPS through his first 145 career games is 642. I mean, you look at other guys that are around that in their first 145 games. Carlos Gomez was 648. Brian Dozier was only 634. I mean, it's not unheard of to have a start like this, but it's just the contact rate is what the most concerning part of this. And I just think you have to go down to AAA to improve and get better on that. He went down to AAA last year and he came back up in September and did nice pitching, because I mean, September is glorified AAA almost. I mean, when you're out of it, teams, you're facing a lot of pitching that probably doesn't belong in the major leagues. But he still did strike out a lot at that time, like you hinted at, 63% contact, I believe you said, in the month of September. It's a lot of red flags being waved. I'm not completely off of him yet, but I'm heavily, heavily leaning in that direction.
I think that he does need more AAA time, and I have a little bit of hope for the strikeout rate, just because when you look at 2014, before he went up to AA, he ended up with a 24.6% strikeout rate and 134 plate appearances, and I think that that's about where you can hope for it to be whenever he does mature enough. I mean, at the end of the day, he is still 23 years old, and this is a big season for him. And since he's hit double A, it's been a problem with the strikeouts, but it hasn't become this big of a problem since the Twins just randomly brought him up to the majors last season.
I mean, it's just really kind of derailed since then, and it's become, or I'm sorry, in 2015 is when it just has plummeted to a point where it's been obvious that he's having these contact problems. If he were to correct things a bit and get things in check, maybe that includes him going down to the minor leagues, whatever, then I think that we'd be seeing a little bit better area in the batting average. We can live with a 268 batting average if he's doing the home run stolen bases well. And the runs and RBIs will come if the Twins lineup gets better. All in all, what I'm saying is in Keeper and Dynasty, I'm not willing to give up yet. I don't think he's a shit player by any means. I think he is a possible top three round player in fantasy if things were to work out for him. And I'm starting, if anything, my confidence is just a little bit lower on him fulfilling that potential based on what we're continuing to see from him as the time goes on. We can't, at the end of the day, we can't glean on 1 month of productivity for too long. We have to hope and pray that things progress. And as of right now, things are progressing. But again, you know, people are looking at 30 at bats and saying it's the end of the world. And I just can't do that yet.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to a guy that is going the complete opposite route, and that is
Let's do some good news.
Yeah, let's stop being down the dumps here for a second. I mean, it's like we don't want to be a depressing mood. It's the beginning of the baseball season, but that's Francisco Lindor of the Cleveland Indians. And since we are a Keeper League, Keeper Dynasty prospect show, I want to look at this from that angle. As of right now, Francisco Lindor is the number three player on the ESPN Player Radar. Obviously, was always a guy in the minor leagues that people looked at for defense first and then offense second. But right now he's leading the league in ISO. So he can, you can kiss that
yeah,
offensive
man.
Profile being low goodbye, because right now he's just absolutely going crazy. But my question is this. I think we all know that this isn't going to continue. If people that are wondering at home, before tonight's games, he had 4 home runs and 26 at-bats, .308 batting average, 1 stolen base kind of kicked in there. 81% contact rate, 16% walk rate, in a very short amount of time. But right now, his hard contact rate is at 143, according to the metrics I'm looking at. That is almost 50 points higher than what he's done each of the last 2 years, which have been very, very close. So he's making, obviously, much harder contact right now. His batted ball profile is completely switched. He's hitting right now, at this moment in time, 45% fly ball rate. I don't think the question is whether it's going to come down, because obviously it's going to come down. My question is, has Francisco Lindor cemented himself as a top 30 player in Dynasty Keeper Leagues right now? This year, he was taken 30th overall in ADP for redraft leagues. But I'll ask you, Andy, is Lindor, if we were going to start a Keeper Dynasty League right now, is he a top 30 pick for you?
100%, no doubt. I have always liked Lindor because I believe in speedy shortstops. Those guys stick around for a good long time. And Lindor especially has shown the ability to get on base, to get hits, to run. So he's already showed us that he can steal, he can hit. And I do agree, it's coming down. Your best bet, if you want him, and you should want him because he's great, your best bet is to sell that to Francisco Lindor's owner. Say, oh, he's in the stratosphere right now, 500 ISO, that's coming down. 43% hard contact rate, that's coming down. But all the while knowing that it's going to come down, but not that much. I am super high on Lindor this year. I don't think he's going to hit 4 home runs every month. You know, that would be great. But there's no doubt in my mind that he drops down a little bit, but stays consistently high, earning a top spot as not only a top keeper fantasy option, but just like a keeper player option at shortstop, stealing all those bags, 15, 20 home runs, easy.
Do you think that since E5 is there, which is, I got to say here, like Mike Napoli was great for the Indians, and I'm not trying to knock him in any way, shape, or form, but the fact that E5's there and the fact that Michael Brantley has been healthy to this point, does that like help his value?
And Santana going to leadoff.
That obviously helps too. I didn't really mention that, but that's absolutely true. His on-base percentage is great up there. Does that add value to him that we didn't think about or add into our projections prior to the season starting, Matt? And also, when you look at the top, you know, what, 10 shortstops in Dynasty Leagues, obviously you have Correa, Machado up at number 1-2 area. Corey Seager has to be in that conversation. Xander Bogaerts. But once you get to that point, like, is it Bogaerts? Is it Lindor?
Are you okay with taking VR ahead of them? Where are you at in terms of long-term, in terms of where Lindor would be long-term, not only overall in Dynasty Keeper Leagues, but also at the shortstop position?
Well, I mean, to answer that question first, man, I am where I'm willing to put Lindor as my third shortstop. I'm putting him ahead of everyone except for Correa and Machado. Because, like you touched on, that lineup adds a superlative amount of value
to
everything.
But not only for this year. We can't expect Brantley to...
No, but
E5's going
to be around.
Right now either. He's just been there.
Yeah, just as you said that, Brantley got hurt.
Yeah, right. I'm not worried about Brantley per se, but just having betting in front of E5. I believe Lindor's hitting third, right? Still?
He's hitting second, at least right now.
Well, you guys haven't mentioned that Kipnis is going to come back, and that's only going to make the lineup better.
Imagine Kipnis hits second when he comes back, and Lindor probably stays in the third spot. Maybe they move Brantley down. Who knows? But I am impressed just watching him, watching these at-bats with Lindor, watching him in the tough series against Texas. I know Texas doesn't have the greatest pitching, but he did. He still hit Darvish and Hamels. I know it's an incredibly small sample. I'm talking about one game, but those at-bats, he was just locked in. I watched him come back from 0-2, worked the count full, and he hit a grand slam. Like, he was an incredible at-bat. The process is what I'm more interested in at this stage of the season, and you can't complain about any of it. And it's amusing too, because I mean, I consider Lindor to be one of my biggest scouting misses of all time for myself personally, because I didn't think Lindor would hit enough. And I mean, you look at like, even you pull up the Fangraphs page. Everyone loves Fangraphs. You look at the top bar. You look at the scouting report. Game power 40, raw power 40. Like, that's their max. He's above that now. I'm so annoying. I wasn't the only one. I think he's got a 70 hit right now at 60 speed, at least, maybe even 70. He doesn't run enough because I think the lineup he's in, he doesn't really need to. So I am a little bit questioning the steals totals, I think, going forward. I think 15 is a if you get 15 out of him this year, you should be ecstatic, because I don't think he's going to run enough with this lineup, like I said. But I think the home runs, I think he's going to push 25 homers this year if he stays healthy. I am so on board this train. The walk rate, small sample size alarms, I get it. Walk rate's doubled. He's walking and king at the same percentage rates right now. Strikeouts at manageable 15%, which is outstanding. There's nothing to hate about this profile, and I am super aggressive on Lindor. I would probably put him in amongst my top 20 players in top 20, 25 players in Dynasty, no doubt.
Shocker, I'm not as high. And
yeah, it's what we're all here for.
Also, very shocker, it's been a week, and well, a little bit over a week to be fair, and I have not one opinion changing on Lindor. I think he's going to hit, instead of maybe 15 home runs this year, and I had him penciled in for a little bit more. I had him penciled in for 17, if I'm being fair. I will maybe bump him up to 19, which is a nice uptick, right? Like, last year he hit 15, yeah. If he hits 19, which it's, I mean, that's four more home runs based on the fact that he's hit four home runs to date. That's, you know, obviously pretty easy. But I think that close to 20 is fair for him, yep. And I think that the stolen bases are fine too. So you'll see a 2020 player with a 300 average, and that's great. Certainly better than I thought coming into his career. And he has shown year by year, he's shown just marginal improvements across the board, and that's something to be looked at as well. I mean, mind you, he didn't play a full season in 2015. He had a 400 bat stint, essentially, where he did really well, and then people drafted him high last year. He kind of fulfilled where he was drafted last year, but I still would take Bogarts ahead of him. Even though the speed isn't there for Bogarts, I think long-term, he is just a better hitter. But at the same time, you can't really take anything away from what Lindor does. He has great plate skills. He's always been a guy that can make contact at a very high rate. For me, I just think that Bogarts has a little bit higher upside based on the lineup being good for a longer period of time. I think the Red Sox just are going to always have a really nice lineup for probably the next 10 years. And Lindor will probably have some struggles here and there. And it's a better ballpark for Boston as well for hitting. But in general, Lindor is obviously great. There's nothing really to glean from this. We do want to highlight the fact that he has just been torching everything right now. But for long term, I still have him as my number five or number six shortstop in Keeper Dynasty. I don't think that there's really any difference there. I still think that he is a premier player. In terms of top 30, I think it's close. I wouldn't mind anybody going a little bit higher or a little bit lower on him. I just have never been a big Lindor guy. he's not the type of guy that I usually lean towards. And I don't think that the walk rate is going to be staying the same this year. I think he's obviously he's looking to pull a little bit more and get some more power in there. He's obviously trying to change his batted ball profile a bit. He's trying to hit more fly balls, which could work out for him in terms of fantasy for this year. But I don't think that that's a long-term a good long-term formula for success in terms of his contact rate, et cetera. So
I think the one of the things that in Keeper Dynasty, if you're somehow doing a Keeper Dynasty draft now, I think one of the things that does hurt him a little bit is the depth at the shortstop position, because he's one of the elite players. You're not going to drop him too much, but you might lean with taking a guy like he's going to go much higher, but this is probably a bad example, but you might go Anthony Rizzo over Lindor just because of the depth position. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think the shortstop depth is going to hurt him a little bit in a position like that. I think from raw talent alone, he's a top 30 guy, but in a draft, he might not be just because of the shortstop talent.
So Matt, so if I could give you between option A and option B, option A is Freddie Freeman and Lindor or Rizzo and Seager. Which one are you going with?
I would probably take Rizzo and Seager.
Yeah, I would take Rizzo and Seager too.
But I think that's more because of my Rizzo over Freeman than anything else. But
no, and I get that. But I think you, Matt, you said that you would have Lindor.
Yeah, third, I get what you're saying because second, I mean that's perfect because it's a good analogy because you'd be passing up a Rizzo to make that pick. You know what I'm saying? I agree with what you're saying.
So. I actually have Lindor below Seager because I think Seager's potential to hit 320 with 30 home runs is there. Like he can do this. And obviously, one year less in the league than Lindor, we have a little bit more we can extrapolate a little bit more for Seager. But I like Lindor, and I like what I'm seeing. And I think you can, if you're a savvy owner who does trade a lot, there's market for hey, this guy's going to come back down. Try to work a trade there for him. If you need a shortstop too, if you got Seager, you're all right.
Yeah, I'm checking out his spray chart right now, and he's just straight pulling everything. So,
his opposite last year he had his opposite field hit was 25.3. This year it's 17.4. And usually we say opposite field hitting is a good not only distinction of power, spray power, but it's also a distinction of control, choking up on the bat. Something Derek Jeter did very well, choked up on the bat, put the ball in right field when you need a single really badly. So, if he's pulling everything, that is worrisome. But I like him behind Machado, Correa, Seager, and Bogarts at shortstop.
One thing to look at too when you pull up those batting charts, those spray charts for which hitter. So when you're looking at those, so versus lefties and versus righties, I mean you have to play that into consideration when you're actually looking at the physical spray charts. But minor thing.
Yeah, I'm only looking at him from a left-handed standpoint right now, and I'm looking through the barrels leaderboard as well, and he's not sniffing that at the moment, which barrels is the number one stat I like to look at for exit velocity and this StatCast Redvolution right now, because for barrels it's just a very simple thing that I can look at quickly that I could just really
just for comparison's sake, who's like the top three guys in barrels right now?
If at it's least on the quick search right now is Chris Davis, Chris Davis, Miggy, and Gary Sanchez. I think this has a little bit of spring training in it though as well. Or maybe some last year too.
I need to be updated.
So I need to do another search, but I don't have time while I'm going through all this. But I will do a more in-depth search to make sure it's all accurate. But Lindor's never been a hard contact guy, based on what I said earlier. At the moment, he's making outrageously hard contact. And I don't want to make it sound like I'm down on Lindor either, or like I'm letting past narrative on him fuel my future predictions for him. I'm more or less looking at what he's done to date. And to date, he's been a guy that's always hit the ball on the ground first and then been more of a 15 home run, 15 to 20 steal guy with a strong batting average. Right now, he has changed his batted ball profile in a short sample to the point where you would think he would hit 25-plus home runs, and I just don't think that's him. So,
I'm going to ask you a question. How big of a gap overall player-wise for you is Lindor from Correa?
It's probably
sizable
around,
still?
Probably around like 12 to 15 players.
Okay. All right. No, not that's that fair.
Big. And I think Correa. Okay.
The lack of speed is my thing with Correa. I think Lindor is going to have 15 stolen bases a lot longer than Correa is even going to have 10.
Maybe.
I know that's projecting
Correa
out a lot.
Has the potential
like we talk about with Moncada all the time, him switching later on in his career from a 25, 20, or 20, 20 type guy to being more of a 45 or 40, 10 guy whenever he matures a bit. And I think that that's what we might see Correa do.
And Correa down the line, butt ton of to RBIs base. Too.
Yeah, and Correa down the line shifting to third base actually might help him because the depth of shortstop. So, I mean, because I think that everyone kind of knows that's probably what's going to happen with him. But it's interesting debate. I mean, you can't go wrong with either of them. Trust me, building a franchise cornerstone with one of those two guys.
You're
but
good.
It's just interesting to know. Yeah, and throw Seager in that mix and Bogarts.
All right, let's before we get into some pitchers and stuff, let's talk about draft really fast. So. Our sponsor, Draft, is brand new, and we absolutely love it. On Draft, it's a draft day every day. Draft is a simple daily fantasy app where you can do snake drafts just like the ones you do at the beginning of your season-long league. They last for just one night, and they take only minutes to complete. On Draft, you can play for free, or better yet, play for money. Get this, your chances of winning on Draft are almost three times better than your chances of winning on other sites. If you're playing fantasy for money and not spending hours a day doing it, you absolutely should be playing on Draft. Download the Draft app now. Just search Draft in the App Store and it will come up first. Be sure to enter the promo code FWFB when you download and you will get a 100% bonus up to $600 when you deposit. Again, search Draft in the App Store and be sure to enter the promo code FWFB. With that, let's go into some starters really fast. So I do want to kind of touch on Jordan Montgomery while I have you, Matt. He made a start today against the Rays. He did fairly well. What can you tell us about Jordan Montgomery? And do you think, A, he will keep the job for a bit this year with the Yankees, and B, that he can be mixed league viable?
I definitely think he can be mixed league viable with the starting pitching depth. I do think he keeps the job at least for the foreseeable future. I mean, the Yankees do not have a lot of starting pitching depth, and one of their arms that was probably going to be in the mix for a late season call up, Mr. Kaprielian, we'll talk about him in a minute. He's not going to be anymore for this year and probably next year. And the thing with Montgomery is he's one of those guys that kind of slides under the radar because he doesn't have monster stuff. But you watch him today against the Rays, he pitched pretty well, 4 2/3. I think he got 7 strikeouts, 6 of them were on the slider and they were swinging. And that kind of goes against the narrative of him not having a put away pitch because his best pitch in every report I've read has been the changeup. The changeup's good. The curveball's good. The slider is obviously good. The fastball's nice. 4-pitch mix. He controls and locates everything. As you saw a little bit today, Mike, he goes over the top a little bit with the delivery. So I think he's a little bit deceptive to right-handed hitters. I think they lose the ball a little bit there, and it kind of comes out a different arm angle. And like you said, he can repeat his delivery nice, and he hits a spot with every pitch. He can command and control all 4 offerings, which is definitely something. He even has a slight ground ball tilt and does a nice job of avoiding home runs, which obviously in Yankee Stadium is a good thing, especially being a lefty and kind of neutralize some of those lefties with that nice slider. But you have to be impressed with the debut. The Yankees had him pitch the first game of the season in the minor leagues in High A Tampa because they had bad weather in the Northeast with Trenton and Scranton. So they didn't want to have him, you know, get pushed back for rain delay so they wouldn't be on target to make this start. So they have been mapping this out. He's building off a really good spring. Him and Chad Green were kind of head-to-head for that 5 spot, and Montgomery clearly won the job based on numbers alone, and then he even backed it up with his minor league appearances. But I think Montgomery offers a level of safety. The Yankees' offense is going to be decent. It's not going to be, you know, it's no Gary Sanchez in the lineup anymore. That might hurt a little bit. But Higashioka is not a terrible catcher. They worked together today. It was interesting. Pitcher and catcher both making their major league debut together. I wouldn't have done that, but it worked out for them. But, hey, you got to like what you saw from Montgomery today. And I think you can build on it for going forward for at least the next month or so. But after that, anything you get after that is pure gravy from my point of view.
He's a 4th rounder out of South Carolina. Columbia. And he stands, what, 6'4", 225?
He's a tall 6'4". Yeah, he's a 6'6", I believe.
Some people compared him to a Chris Sale type windup, but I can tell you from watching him today, he's much more of a Johan Santana arm slot and delivery than he is Chris Sale.
He repeats his delivery though, and that's the big thing. Right. And like you said, the 4-pitch mix with extreme over the top motion could be some trouble against, you know, same side of guys because maybe you pick up the ball a little more, but that slider is going to neutralize a lot of problems. It was a very nice pitch today.
How about you, Andy? How do you feel about your new beloved Yankee?
Oh, I'm, you know, I love it when Yankees come up and do well. Although I'm kind of mad because, you know, at the beginning of the year, and this is one of the things I hate about the Yankees, is that they'll tell you one thing, They'll tell you they're doing something and they'll completely just disregard it a month later. And that was, for the first couple of weeks, Joe Girardi said, we're going to run four starters because we can. And everyone that I talked to was like, that's such a stupid idea. Why would you do that? And I was actually expecting them to give the ball to Chad Green, who I really like. He had a good spring, decent metrics, is a good pitcher, but instead they went with four starters and then they brought up Montgomery. So I know it's really easy to look at young guys and say, ooh, look, he's so shiny, he's so new, seven strikeouts in his opening day start, that's so great. He has put up decent numbers his one full year in Double A, 102 innings, 8.53 K per nine is decent, 2.55 ERA is nice. But again, I something you should do in the beginning of the year is not get emotional when you're looking at pickups and who you're going to invest in the future. Be unemotional. Look at the numbers. Look at the raw metrics and make your decisions on that. Don't go crazy just because he's the new toy in the shop.
I think a lot of Montgomery is the type of pitcher that gets overrated a lot because you look at the stuff, four pitches that are all above average, but then somebody will come around, like I already said it earlier, but he doesn't have a strikeout pitch. Who cares if all four pitches are above average, right? I mean, that's what you want. And he can throw any of them at all counts. I mean, today he featured all four pitches to an extent. But I mean, the fastball velocity was sitting about 92 this spring. I didn't get a chance to see the readings today, so I apologize. I don't have those numbers offhand. But after building on this spring and doing things, I mean, this is the type of profile. We kind of had a discussion a little bit today on Facebook and even in the chat, like what kind of a post-hype prospect. I mean, Montgomery doesn't have the pedigree to be a post-hype guy, but this is the type of guy from a pitching standpoint that gets overlooked. Number from the Cardinals is kind of similar to this, a big lefty with four pitches that are average that doesn't have a big strikeout offering. Like, those are guys that you can use in fantasy that don't have a lot of attention. I guarantee you in a lot of keeper leagues, Montgomery was available on. Maybe that shouldn't have happened. Who knows?
This is what I like, and I'll just, full disclosure, I don't know much about him, to be frank, and all I'm really looking at is his stat page and the fact that he threw today. So I saw the majority of his start. He looked really good mechanically. He also was able to find the zone fairly well. He was really good with his command. A lot more mature than I would think of a guy just coming up for his debut, but what I liked about him, looking at his minor league stats, is that he doesn't give up home runs, like, at all. Nope. He had a 0.21 home run per nine rate in A-ball, 0.40 in high A, and then 0.44 in Double A that season that you mentioned, Andy, the whole Double A season with 102 innings pitched. He's always kept the ball in the yard, which is important as a lefty in Yankee Stadium, which kind of neutralizes the whole short porch in right field. If he's able to, you know, face righties, and if that's kind of his bugaboo, it's a little bit deeper there in center field and in left. That kind of helps him out. He also, like you guys have already mentioned with the pitches, he has some pretty solid offerings. I saw the slider. It looks not necessarily plus, but it was definitely solid enough to get batters out. The Rays aren't a great lineup, so I'm not going to say that he's amazing. But when you're looking at fantasy value for this year, certainly think he's AL-only ad right now. I think that he's a deep mixed league ad as well. If somebody picked him up in a 12-teamer and streamed him today, I have no problem kind of holding on to him and seeing what happens. He could have a decent start here or stretch here where he works it out a bit. I need to look up their schedule and see who they're facing here in the near future. If you, one of you guys
got the Cardinals this weekend. They got the Cardinals this weekend, so I don't think he'll pitch. Obviously, he just pitched today, so he won't pitch that series. So whatever they got after that, Pittsburgh, I believe, right? So he'll do a start in Pittsburgh, it looks like.
Which is fine.
I might actually be there for that start, which would be pretty cool.
Yeah, so it would be pretty cool. But I do think that he's worth holding on to if you picked him up to stream today in shallower formats. Definitely worth an ad in AL only. Keeper leagues, definitely speculation ad right now. And there's a chance. I'm not saying it's a massive chance, but looking at the Yankees rotation, CC Sabathia, Michael Pineda is going to pitch all year, but he's due to be a free agent. He could get traded if the Yankees' season's derailed.
Severino's not stretched out.
Severino definitely is not stretched out, and he's not looking great either. You have Masahiro Tanaka, who since, 2014 at this point has been on his last leg with that UCL, and after that you don't have a lot. So I think that he's worth an ad, and I think that there's a very decent possibility that we see him pitch 20-plus starts in the major leagues, and that could be worth something. He's always had pretty high strikeout per nine totals in the minor leagues, always fairly good FIPs as well. I liked what I saw on the field for one game
take that for what it's worth, but I like it. I like what I saw.
There's another. I'm gonna ask you guys,
listeners, listen up here.
Go ahead. Right,
You're hearing a Rays fan talk about a Yankee pitcher. You got to take that with a grain of salt. He's talking crap. He's talking crap about Pineda because he didn't like what happened in that last start.
Oh man, on a completely separate. Clearly, note, all I was doing clearly was ranting Pineda about him doing.
Pineda's
going to
win Cy Young.
You know how you do the whole superstition thing? Whenever somebody's throwing a perfect game, whenever you mention it, then they end up losing it. That's all I was doing. I was on Facebook. I was on Twitter. I was everywhere. I was just saying, Pineda's definitely going to do this. He's definitely going to throw a no-hitter. It's happening.
I'm going to ask you guys a really quick, would you rather for the rest, I say rest of the season, but I don't think either of these guys can be counted on for the rest of the season. Who would you rather for the next 2 months? They both pitched today, so they should be mapped out to have the same exact number of starts. Brandon McCarthy or Jordan Montgomery?
I'm actually going to go C, none of the above. I'd rather go Amir Garrett.
You have to assume Garrett's not going to be available in any formats after the first two starts he's had. So
I'd probably say McCarthy, yeah.
Okay, all right. I think that's a good barometer of value because McCarthy should be available in all formats too, and he just pitched extremely well against a tough Cubs lineup. Wind was blowing in, so he probably got lucky on about two or three fly balls that I saw that probably would have been out. But, I mean, that's just a barometer. I'm trying to set a level here for Montgomery.
I think it sort of depends on what you want to do. You want the safe option, I would say McCarthy, because I don't think McCarthy is ever going to, you know, knock the cover off the ball and, you know, strike out 10 people. But if you want a little bit more of a wild card option, you could go Montgomery and have a little bit of upside with your eggs in the morning. I will say, though, that if you're in a league which is, you know, prospect crazy, I'm okay taking a trade for Montgomery. Pretty much any offer besides ridiculous offers, because, you know, deals like that is you trade Montgomery. He's doing hot. He's got one start in him. Maybe he'll do well in his next start, and you trade him then. But you trade him, and then you kind of forget about him. And I don't think he's going. And any player you get is going to give you more value than Montgomery could give you the full year.
All right, we went a long time on Montgomery, but overall. I think that he's worth a flyer. I mean, we saw a guy like Seth Lugo put up some decent ratios for a little while last year. We might be able to see Montgomery do okay for a little while. So overall, I think that he's worth an ad. Some other guys that have our attention, at least for right now, at least news-wise, James Caprielan. Matt, just give us a quick update on him.
Well, make it short and sweet. It looks like he needs Tommy John surgery, which is depressing. He had that elbow injury the last season, shut down for a little bit, came back. He was throwing, and his velocity numbers were way high. He had a little spike velocity situation going on in the AFL, and I was interested in following him to see if that velocity levels was going to stick this time around because, you know, when people have elbow injuries and stuff during rehab, it can get stronger. So maybe the velocity would be for real, and unfortunately, we're not going to be able to find out because it does look like he's going to need Tommy John surgery. And also, I guess, another pitcher injury. Luke Weaver had to leave his start after one inning with back spasms. For AAA Memphis earlier this week, and he's been placed on the DL there. Normally I wouldn't be worried, but in spring training, he also left to start with back issues. So that's one to monitor. Obviously, he's in the minor leagues right now. He would be the first man up if the Cardinals need anybody, but unless his back is flared up, so who knows.
Let's move on. Looks like we have Andrew Moore getting called up for Seattle. Matt, give us some Andrew Moore talk.
He's not getting called up. He's had a really nice start. He's kind of a guy like Montgomery. That's kind of the reason why I wanted to touch on them both. He's a guy, four pitch mix, commands everything, and doesn't have that plus offering. But all the reports seem to indicate everything's taking a step forward. So he might be a guy if you have pitching heavy leagues or anything like that. He might be a guy worth potentially in Safeco Field when he comes up. Seattle doesn't have a lot of depth. I mean, they have Ariel Miranda out there making starts every fifth day for them right now, who is not terrible, but Andrew Moore is in double A, so he's one phone call away. Montgomery, you know, guys like this, he could be the next guy to have a nice run of nice starts for a few. So he's a guy to go scoop up now. Like I said, AL only, Dynasty Leagues would be a good ad. So
here's some hot ceiling guys. Oh, go ahead.
The ceiling's not monstrously high on Moore, but he's a nice, safe innings guy. Once he gets the job, he's not going to kill you.
No, it's good. I want people to know his name. Let's talk about some hot start pitchers, and I will give you guys the opportunity to talk about however you want to talk about them. We have Dylan Bundy, and we also have Amir Garrett as two guys that have been starting off fairly hot. One of them obviously has pitched a little bit longer than the other, but I'll throw it to you, Andy. If you want to talk about one or both, just really quickly, what are you liking or disliking about either or one?
I'll talk about Bundy, just because I know him a little bit better. I've been following Bundy basically since the start of his career. I can remember he was actually the first pick I ever did in what I consider to be my pro league. And I've always loved him. You know, people used to say, you know, work ethic is amazing. He's a huge kid, going to do really well. And there is a lot to like about him. He's kind of the other side of the Byron Buxton story for me. You know, here's a guy that's consistently been at the top of our prospect sheets. And finally, we are getting to see what could be payoff. What to like about him? 11 Ks, 2 walks, very good. No home runs so far, so that's also good, which is going to be a tall order to keep in the AL East. That is pretty much the only thing that's stopping me from hitting the buy button, is that I know the home runs are coming. I know they're there. The fly balls that he has been known to give up in the past are going to come back to bite him. So if I have Dylan Bundy right now, I'm going to ride him as long as I can. And yes, I know that was funny. Ride him as long as I can and then sell him as high as I can. Because as much as I do love Dylan Bundy and I, you know, I believe the Cy Young pedigree that he was given 3 years ago, I know that the home runs are an issue and I know they're coming.
Matt, Amir Garrett, Dylan Bundy, one, both. What do you like?
We talked about Garrett last week on the pod before he even made his major league debut and then subsequently his second start. Both went 6. I want to say a quick comment. His slider is playing better at the major league level than I thought it would. Seems to have a little bit more bite on it than it did in the videos I've seen. But I'm more interested in Bundy as well. Things with Bundy that I like, he's cut down the walks. Yes, it's only 2 starts, so take that for what it's worth. But the walks significantly cut. The most important thing is he's got his, which was at the time, it was an 80 grade pitch, according to some scouts. He got that cutter back. It's kind of a cutter slider slutter.
Throwing it 28% of the time.
Yeah, and he's relying on it heavily, which I don't know what that says about his potential health. Maybe his health is in a better spot now where he feels he can rely on that pitch like he could back in the day. Or, you know, maybe he's kind of just say, fuck it, here's what I have for the rest of this, and I'm gonna use it. I'm very excited. I've seen the pitch. It looks nice. I don't think it's quite back to the levels it was when he was an amateur and when he first got into the Orioles system. Like I said, some scouts threw a 70 and 80 grade on that pitch. I wouldn't say it's there yet, but he's relying on it so much that he has utmost confidence in it. And everything you saw about Bundy last year, you need to throw it out because he's a completely different pitcher with that weapon. AL East is a tough division to pitch in, like Andy mentioned. So the walks and the new pitch are kind of – the new old pitch is kind of encouraging for me. But I'm still – I'm not paying a crazy price for Bundy. I mean, yeah, he's 24, but he's out of options. He was out of options last year. So, I mean, Baltimore has – I mean, he's not going to threaten Baltimore, not going to send him down or anything. They have no depth. But I don't think he really breaks out until he's out of Baltimore and somewhere else that allows him to use that pitch as liberal as he has, but for longer stretches.
I'm willing to sell both. Just to touch on Garrett real fast, I still love the guy. I don't think he's going to be an ace, and I never have, but I do think that he's going to be a long-term number 3, number 4 starter for fantasy teams, which is worth the ad, worth the speculation, especially in keeper dynasty formats where he's probably already owned. He did get 9 ground ball outs today, which is nice. His slider's looking good. He went six innings, 2 starts consecutively, 5 strikeouts today, which is nice. Certainly I'm worried about the strikeouts with him right now because I don't think that his stuff profiles well enough to get above average strikeout numbers. And I think we'll see that over the course of the season, is that his strikeout numbers just won't be there. But I like that he's getting exposure now. I think that the Reds are going to give him a long leash. He's going to end up pitching as full of a season as he can in the major leagues. And that's going to provide value, especially not as much in NL only, but in keeper dynasty, it's nice to have a guy already up getting his exposure, and you might be able to utilize him to his full capabilities going into next year, possibly with some improvement as well. Dylan Bundy, I'm scared to death of. I don't like the fact that his fastball velocity is at 92.5, and he cut it down to almost 45%. The usage is actually at 43% right now. Last year, it was 61.5%. Also up to 94 miles an hour velocity last year. Right now, it's at 92.5, and that's with a hot gun.
Yeah, that's a very valid point. So Velocity's actually down a lot farther than you think it is.
Yeah, it's not just down like a tick and a half. It's more down like almost three ticks at this point.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a problem for
that's
me.
Sounding the alarms.
Andy mentioned the home run problem. It's always been an issue. Cam Yards is a problem. We also have the fact that his control, while it's good right now and while it was pretty solid last year, that's always been an issue for him. We also have the fact that he's just not been somebody that's been durable. So while I like Bundy, yeah. I always will be intrigued. I think that this is the perfect time to sell him, possibly even a start or two forward if he's able to continue to be fine. I think that there's going to be a clear opportunity to sell him at this point. But don't wait too long, because I do think the inevitable will come and he will end up kind of tanking at some point. The strikeout numbers haven't even been that great for this year either, quite yet. I mean, it's only been a couple starts, so I'm not going to sit here and make any type of real assumptions. But I am worried about Bundy. I'm selling both of them in season long right now. Go ahead.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you.
Let's talk about some guys that just haven't had – well, let's talk about another guy that had a hot start, but we don't really need to go in depth. Michael Kopech, he's had a great first start. I think we all knew that. We all love him here. There's nothing really to gain, but you as listeners, if you haven't noticed, Michael Kopech had a really nice start. What was it, 10 strikeouts and four innings, Matt, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, 10 strikeouts and four innings. And as long as I'm on this Prospect podcast, and you too, Mike, we're going to bring up Michael Kopech every week.
Yeah, so we're just going to have a Michael Kopech segment. So the hot guy of the week. We'll just bring him up. We'll just call it the Michael Kopech segment.
I didn't know he was dating that girl from that reality show. Did you?
I didn't know it was a girl from a reality show. I just assumed that all guys with long, glowing, blonde locks get really nice-looking women.
Yeah, well,
100% chance of stealing your girlfriend.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
She will be nowhere near Michael Kopech or Noah Syndergaard. Ever. You hear that? You hear that, babe?
The long flowing locks?
Let's talk about a couple guys that I'm not really concerned about, but we'll mention that they've had rough first go around. So Jason Groom got lit up in his first start. Obviously, no conclusions can be made from that, but he did look rough. The one that I do want to touch on a little bit longer, not too much longer, is Lucas Giolito, because I did watch his start from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And I even messaged you while I was watching it, Matt, that his velocity is just not good. It's sitting in the 88 to 91 range. A lot of times sitting 89 to 90. That's pretty much where he sat the majority of the game. And if not for the curveball, still looks good. So I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm like alarmed by Giolito, but the curveball is fine. The changeup was good too, but there's just not enough separation in the velocity, because his curveball is still a plus-plus pitch, but the changeup itself was still sitting almost, 76, 78 miles an hour, and that's just not enough separation from your fastball. Typically, we want a little bit bigger separation there. He wasn't exhibiting that. It's one start. I posted on Twitter, and some people were like, well, why are you making conclusions? I'm not completely down on Giolito, but when you factor in the velocity drop last year, the Tommy John from a couple years ago, and the fact that he had bad major league exposure last year, not just in terms of numbers, but in terms of missing bats, the strikeout numbers, it's becoming more and more unlikely for me that Giolito is going to end up being anything more than a number three starter in fantasy once he is promoted to the major leagues. And that doesn't mean he can't be serviceable for fantasy, because I certainly am not off that train. But I do think that there is some glaring things happening right now that make me feel like he's not going to be the ace that people thought.
Andy and I had a discussion kind of before the podcast started about what kind of stats and what kind of information do you look at this type, this point of the year? And I didn't answer it. I said I was going to save it for this podcast. For me personally, for pitchers, it's velocity numbers and Ks and walks and nothing else. I don't give a shit about ERA. I really don't ever. And for hitters, it's the same. I just look at walks, and you look at strikeouts. But also, in addition, for pitchers, you look at velocity readings. And the velocity readings on Giolito have me worried, because he's still, from the limited – I didn't watch the whole start, but from the limited things I did see, is he's sitting, like you said, 88, 89 miles an hour, but he's still pitching like he's throwing 93, 94.
Yeah, he threw it up in the zone and struck out Pedro Alvarez on a high heater that was about 89 or 88 miles an hour.
He uses that pitch, that fastball, to set up that monster curveball, which is still there. But pitching at the upper echelon of the strike zone, when you're not throwing premium velocity is a recipe for big time trouble. So that is concerning to me. Next start, I will be watching that for sure, because if there's it's one thing if he could adapt and, you know, start paying a little more if he's going to throw 80-89. But if he's just throwing, hey, here's my best stuff, hit it, but it's 5 miles an hour, 6 miles an hour less than it was before, that's troubling.
And even more importantly, and obviously likely with a bunch of young starters, almost every young starter, is his command still bad? It's not it's not remotely where it needs to be. So not only is his stuff dwindling except for the curveball, but the command still is not where you would like it to be for somebody that should be on the brink of being called up to the major leagues. We'll see what happens. Some hot hitters to this point in the minor leagues. We have Trey Mancini, who is not in the minor leagues, but he hit two dongs tonight. Thought I'd mention him as somebody that is, you know, hot at the moment. Heimer Candelario has been stunting out in AAA thus far. So is Ian Happ. Ian Happ destroyed a ball the other day. I think he had three straight games with a home run, if I'm not mistaken. He's been doing
great. One of them was a monster shot. One of them was like every bit of 430, man.
Yeah, he crushed the shit out of it. Dom Smith, like we predicted, is currently
trade him now. Hot. Trade Dom Smith now. He's in Vegas. He's going to put up cartoon numbers. Get rid of him now, because you do not want him. If you go, if you have a fantasy squad and you have Dom Smith plugged in at your first base spot, you are failing.
Absolutely agree. Lucas Ersig, one of our favorites around here, he has been hot recently as well. Aaron Judge, major leaguer, he is up to 3 home runs now. He's looking every bit as powerful as we thought. I got
strikeout rate down.
He's got the strikeout rate down. He's hitting for a pretty good average. The Yankees have trusted him. There's been no sign that they aren't going to play him all season long, and I don't think that the Yankees are going to be good enough to where they can afford to send him down. I think he needs every bit of the major league exposure he's going to get. Sorry, Andy. And then
crying silently over here.
For the Twitter questions on a couple guys, we had Ahmed Rosario and Franklin Barreto. We'll just kind of touch on them really fast because I don't think our stances have changed on either of them. But
no. I'll throw it both to you, guys Andy. Are up this year. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I'll throw it to Andy since we haven't heard from him in a while. Do you have any remarks on Barreto or Rosario to this point?
I think the one piece of news that you should have for both of them is that they're both being experimented at other positions, which is an interesting thing because. Which is a little odd for me for Barreto, especially because I think Marcus Semien has got to be one of the worst fielding shortstops that has ever lived. So we need to, you know, I like that they're moving him around. Oakland has shown that they're okay doing that. But I do think both Barreto and Rosario are up this year. Playing their natural positions is how I would like them. They'll feel more comfortable there. But, you know, if a guy starts off hot, and we rated him high, there's not much news other than to say the window is slowly closing to buy.
I think the reason Barreto is going to second is because it's just a matter of time when Lowry goes down at second base for the A's, which makes more sense in terms of bringing Barreto up. I think he is one of the faster call-ups that we'll see, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's tearing it up now, too. And Oakland, I mean, once they get that extra year of control, there's no reason to keep Barreto down there. And I think having him at second base is nice. And we talked about it on the pod last week with him at second, and we talked about Ahmed Rosario getting moved around and playing a little bit of third base for the Mets in AAA. And you look at the third base now, Jose Reyes, he's kind of better suited as utility role. David Wright is just collecting a check at this point, unfortunately. So I think they have a nice opening at third base, and I think you could see Rosario up this year at third base, probably in, you know, around July, if he performs well in Vegas, which he assuredly will. And another tidbit of news position wise, Jorge Mateo of the Yankees in Double A is actually started his first game in center field last night.
Nice. So that's my idea.
Yeah. That's a little bit of Jacoby Ellsbury insurance. And also you didn't mention that now Gardner's out, which pretty much cements that Judge is going to be there for a long time. And it also means that Hicks is going to get an extended look.
It might be Matt Holliday in the field too, because Garner had 5 steals pretty quickly, and I would have liked to see. As much as I don't like the Yankees, I've always admired Brett Gardner, so I was hoping for a little bit of a resurgence for him. But get this with Rosario, he has multiple hits in 4 of 6 games. He has a 6-game hitting streak as well. And then Barreto started the season with 3 multi-hit games and has an RBI in looks like 5 of 6 games as well. So they're both.
He's been a monster. He's been one of the best players in AAA this year. And there's limited time, obviously. But
yeah, if I'm gonna nitpick, which I'm gonna do because that's my job, I'd like to see Rosario get a walk. Hasn't so far, which is problematic. But he also hasn't been striking out, so beggars can't be choosers.
Do you think hitting in Las Vegas can have a negative effect on his approach? I mean, because you look at that, it's a shithouse for pitchers. So I mean, you got to think anything coming up there. I'm gonna hit this and I'm gonna hit that. And do you think he might be more aggressive just because of the ballpark he's playing in?
That's sort of something we might see when the transition actually happens, when he moves from hitter friendly to non-hitter friendly.
Yeah, we need a bigger sample for sure to draw that conclusion. Yeah. But yeah, I agree.
Two major leaguers that have been doing well to start off the season, one being Yasiel Puig, the other one being Kyle Schwarber. I'll give my 2 cents before you guys do here. Kyle Schwarber, nothing's changed for me. If anything, I think it's what you brought up prior to the show starting, Matt, is that not only is he leading off, but it looks like they're going to play him a bit against lefties, a little bit more than we might have thought. Despite the fact that he's getting substituted in games, he has still been able to rack up 4 or 5 plate appearances or at-bats. So you look at the last few days even, right now we're recording on the 12th, but he ended up sitting a couple days, the 9th, 8th, 7th, and the 6th. He got 4 at-bats or more, 3 of those games with 5 at-bats or more. Mind you, one of those went into extra innings. The only problem here with Schwarber is that he's not starting off hot. He has a couple home runs, but I think the bigger thing is that he's going to be playing more than we estimated here. Still, to me, I don't have him as anything near a top 80 pick, which is where he went. I still think it's going to be the same thing here. You're going to be looking at a guy that's going to hit for 25 or more home runs, pretty low batting average, but an on-base percentage at least, he's going to give you a very big boost there, probably a 330-plus on-base percentage, and he's going to hit for a pretty decent amount of RBIs, probably more runs scored than you would have expected prior to the season starting just because of the fact that he's leading off. But I don't think that's guaranteed that he leads off all year. We're probably going to see a scenario where Jason Hayward could get that spot again if he were to decide to hit, which is he's done a decent job of recently. I mean, I'm not going to say that he's all the way back, but he has done.
Exit velocity's up. Yep.
He's done pretty decent recently. And then Yasiel Puig, I don't know what you guys expected, but Yasiel Puig's a stud. He always has been. It's just been whether he, A, gets the playing
time. They're letting him be a stud, yeah. Which is the important part.
It's whether he gets the playing time or whether they just kind of leave him alone. And if they leave him alone, he's going to end up hitting for almost 20 home runs, probably more than 20 home runs, to be honest with you. Steal a couple bases. He's always had a good hit tool. I think he's going to hit somewhere near 280. So this, all in all, I'm saying that the hot start doesn't surprise me. I love the guy. I love Puig. I've had multiple shares of him. He was going way too late in drafts. If you're wondering whether you need to buy or sell, buy for me because the Dodgers lineup's going to be good. He's going to be good. There's going to be no problems here with Yasiel Puig. I love him to death. If you're picking between the two, I take Puig, even though Kyle Schwarber was the higher pick. I think that Puig's just going to be a little bit more steady, especially in 5x5 formats. If you're an on-base percentage, that I completely understand going Schwarber, and I think that that's probably the better bet there. But in regular 5x5, I want somebody like Puig. Andy?
I completely agree. I'm going Puig over Schwarber. Schwarber is leading off now, but Joe Maddon is like the ficklest of managers. You just don't know what he's thinking day-to-day. He could just totally switch up his mind and put Bryant leading off. You just don't know when that's going to happen, and he's very much going to play the hot hand, and if Schwarber is going to struggle, he's going to move him down. One of the reasons I like Puig, batting 259, BABIP 222, which means we could see that come up a little bit with the high ISO and a decent hard contact hit. That average will go up. The home runs have always been legit, and I think he's one of those guys where he was too much in his head. You know, they're like, send him down, he's going crazy, he's like all over the place. So I agree with you, Mike. Leave him alone. Let him do his business. Sit in the corner of the dugout. Play baseball.
I'm with you guys on Puig, man. They're finally letting him play. I mean, him and Mattingly kind of had a little issues. He had a rough year last year, kind of a lost year. Let him play. He's one of the top, 25 players in the league, I think. Maybe not from a fantasy realm, but from overall talent, I think he's there. Schwarber is like an enigma for me. I think I valued him a little bit lower just because he didn't have catcher eligibility. I still think he's obviously going to have some value. He's playing every day and leading off, which I didn't think he was going to play every day. And the leadoff thing kind of came. We heard whispers about it in the preseason. We're like, oh, yeah, okay, we'll believe him when we see it. And, well, now it's here. I don't think he's going to leave that spot anytime soon. I mean, he's seeing a league-leading 4.65 pitches per at-bat from the leadoff spot. So he's doing what he wants to do. But I think with that 4.65 pitches per at bat, he also has a 35% strikeout rate. I don't know, we're talking small samples, but Kyle Schwarber's career at this point has been small sample bursts throughout. I mean, came up for a half season, had 7 at-bats, missed a season, came back in the World Series, and now we have this. So we don't have any long sustained stretches. But from a little bit I've seen, I think he can hit 35 home runs this year, but I do think he probably hits 230, 240. But if you're in OBP format, I think he can easily have a 360 OBP, if not greater. And that is a very, very nice number for, and supplies a lot of value in OBP formats.
Did he play tonight? Let me see if he played tonight.
He did. He struck out twice.
Yeah.
He struck out twice. That's all he did.
Against Brandon McCarthy.
Well, he struck out 3 times total for the game, had 1 walk. But he's walked 4 times the last 2 games, so that's a 4-4 strikeout to walk ratio. There you go.
380 OBP right now with a 220 average.
Yeah, so that gives him 4 at-bats or 4 play appearances or more in every single game thus far, except for the first game of the season. There you go.
Which, yep, yeah.
Moving on, this will be our last segment. Let's just touch on some cold players to this point. Let's not freak out Keeper Dynasty guys, because I know a bunch of these names we're going to say are people that are high pedigree players that I know us on this show personally love. So we will touch on the Twitter guy first, and that is Ozzy Albies. Nothing to really worry about here for me. He's playing in AAA. I think he's 19 years old. I have no problems.
20, yeah.
So yeah. There you go. No problems there. I know he was mentioned as a guy for us to talk about on Twitter. There's not enough for us to talk about yet. So
I think that the Brandon Phillips acquisition kind of slowed his timeline a lot this year. I think there was rumors he'd come up this year. I mean, with Phillips there, and we know how Phillips is, he's not going to approve a trade anywhere else. I mean, it was Cincinnati or Atlanta. He lives in Atlanta, so he's not going anywhere. The Braves aren't going to bench him for Albies to start Albies' clock. That doesn't make any sense. So I do think the timetable for Albies has been a little bit delayed because of that. But
agreed.
I mean, the overall value doesn't change. He's still a top 25 prospect in the game, almost in any resource you look at. He's going to be a lot of steals. He's going to be Jose Peraza, basically. And that's a good player.
Agreed. It's just going to take a little bit longer time than we would assume, based on the fact that it looks like Phillips is going to be a mainstay. More cold starts, Ronald Acuna. Again, these are all just too small sample size. I'm just mentioning cold starts that you, as the listeners, can have it in the back of your mind that they're having cold starts. J.P. Crawford, Austin Meadows has been off to probably the coldest starts of the group.
Yeah.
I want to kind of get an update on it as we're talking, just because it was that bad when I looked at it last time. Let's see. I know this is great radio.
048.
While you're looking there, I want to talk about J.P. Crawford, and I think being Crawford is having a slow start, which is kind of surprising because he's supposed to be advanced. I mean, he did play some of the year last year in AAA, and now he's kind of looked at as the veteran on that team with Nick Williams and Rhys Hoskins and Dylan Cousins all joining him and Jorge Alfaro in AAA. It's a good team. He's kind of looked at as the guy. He's not hitting at all. He hasn't hit above 265 at any level since A-ball, and he's got a combined 13 homers and 24 steals in the last 2 seasons. 2 full seasons, and that's not appealing from a fantasy aspect. His best skill in fantasy is the OBP. And probably runs being toward the top of the lineup with that approach in Philadelphia. But I am not a J.P. Crawford guy. I'll admit that easily to you right now. But I don't see the upside.
I agree.
Yeah, I think of the names that you mentioned, Meadows, Acuna, Albies, I think the one I'm most worried about is Crawford, because I've been to the Iron Pig Stadium, and it is a fun place to play, and these kids have fun there, and it is a good team. So, you know, it is 25 plate appearances, so we will have to wait and see a little bit longer. And I know for a fact that some people were questioning, because I think the Braves brought up Camargo.
Johan Camargo, he basically middle infielder, glove first guy, makes a lot of contact, so
yeah,
nothing
and
great.
People were worried that they were thinking, why is Atlanta giving him a look over Albies? I don't think that's a reason to worry at all. If anything, when players that we like or prospects we like have slow starts, it's good for you. It's a buying opportunity, especially on guys with high ceilings like Acuna and Albies. So if you can force owners into bad trades, I'm all for it.
Yeah, if you can leverage a slow start into good trades, absolutely. But I just think we live in a world of fantasy baseball where the information is so widespread that that's not happening anymore.
You can find a stat that's on your side no matter where you look.
Exactly. So. Just an update.
Well, just make sure you listen to this podcast.
Except for Byron Buxton. You can't find anything there.
That's true. That's very true. Just an update on Meadows since I finally found his page. In 7 games, he has 9 strikeouts, 25 at-bats there. That's obviously a problem. Only 3 hits in that time, also 3 walks there. But if you look at his minor league track record, he's never been somebody that strikes out substantially. He did have a career high in strikeout rate last year in AAA towards the end in 145 plate appearances, 23.4%. Right now it's sitting at almost 38%. It's bound to get better, so don't worry about it with Meadows. He's completely fine. Alex Bregman is the last guy we'll talk about here, and we'll just give a little bit on him since he hasn't had the greatest start in the world. He's obviously somebody that was taken very, very high in drafts this year, but right now, 212 batting average. I think a lot of people expected him to lead off or be hitting somewhere at the top of the lineup this year, and that's why I ended up not having him in a lot of drafts, actually at all. I don't have him anywhere, any shares of him, except for in one Keeper Dynasty AL-only league. That's it. So the reason being is because I just did not expect him to be hitting atop the lineup. Now, I did not expect George Springer to be hitting the way he is currently, which is...
Yeah, me neither. I traded him in a Dynasty League this year. Whoops.
Yeah, he's been on a complete tear, which I actually think is a buy or sell high moment, but that's just me. Either way, I do think if something happens with Springer, Bregman would be the player that moves up to the leadoff role, but I don't know what anybody expected here. People cannot...
Remember his slow start last year?
Yeah. People can't freak out over a small sample. It's 33 at-bats before tonight's games. You have to be patient here. He had an insanely bad start last year. I think that he's going to turn it around. I know he's going to turn around. I know he's going to turn it around. To what extent, we'll see. But I think he's going to be a 15 to 20 home run guy, maybe even more, with a 8 to 10 stolen bases, you know, upside, maybe a little bit higher, 260-ish batting average. He's going to be completely fine. So
I'm comfortable with projecting his stat line out from last year to this year again, but just with the full season, which, like you said, hits exactly what you said. 264 gives him just around 20 home runs. I think that's 20 home runs, and it gives him about 8 to 10 steals. I think that's solid for him this year.
Yeah, I actually disagree. I think he hits about 180, gets sent down, maybe stops playing baseball altogether. And the only reason I'm saying
gets
that
sent
is because...
Get sent down for Colin Moran.
Sent down for Colin Moran. Oh, boy. Whoa. Oh. Andy's wet dream right here.
You win that one, Mike. Mike wins the war of that.
No. I'm only saying that because I made a dumb trade in the beginning of the year, trading away Bregman for a pitching need. But I love Bregman. He's fine. Like, he's going to be okay. He'll probably heat up with the summer and like everybody's saying, I really believe the floor is 25 home runs with him. I truly, honestly believe that's his floor. So again, if this is a situation where you got an idiot owner or some guy who doesn't check the league enough, like force this bad start into a trade as I did. I actually traded him before the year started, so I'm not completely to blame. But force this bad start into a trade and then put him at third base and feel really happy about it.
His month of August last year, he had a 274, 333, 479 line with 23 runs scored, 20 RBIs, and 5 home runs. No stolen bases, but, you know, there you go.
Yeah. It's worth noting he was hitting second. Now he's hitting sixth.
Yeah.
As of today.
Yeah, but that has little to do with, I mean, it has some to do with his bad start, but more to do with the fact that that lineup is one of the
best. Lineup is ridiculous.
Is really stacked. He's hitting 3 or 2 or 4 in any other lineup in the league.
Mind you, I made it a point to say he wasn't leading off. I knew that he had dropped to 6 before I said that.
No,
so
you,
that people kind of looked at
second.
It that way.
You hinted at hitting second, but I just wanted to clarify. Today was actually the day he got moved, the 12th of April. First day he got dropped to 6th.
Yeah. So. But what you should take away is that Colin Moran will be up soon, going to hit 85 home runs. So just that's the takeaway from this.
I wouldn't say 85, but somewhere near there.
Probably 95.
Let's wrap this sucker up. Andy, where can you be reached? What are you up to nowadays?
Hey, Anderson, FWFB, please tweet at me. I'm gaining a following. Yeah. Probably going to start a new segment on Twitter, hoping to gain a little traction there. And I'm really excited about this year. Super excited, super pumped. Go Yankees. Woo.
Matt, where can you be reached, and what are you up to?
Well, I'm at MD Tomp FWFB. I've been working a lot and, trying to watch as much ball as I can, I kind of try to tweet out the last couple of days. I don't know if everyone's been seeing it, but the best pitching matchups of the day throughout every level. So that's been getting some positive feedback. It's been nice to see. I know tomorrow, Sandy Alcantara is pitching for the Double A Springfield, so that's where my focus will be. So come join me and talk to me about Sandy. But watching ball and talking prospects, and we'll listen to our main show on Monday with me and Mike and also Justin. And yeah.
Just make sure if you go fly to minor league games that you don't fly United Airways, because you will get dragged.
Oh yeah, how did we not? That was a joke opportunity.
I saw a good joke today. It said, "I guess United has an app on their phone."
Yeah,
and it said the update on it was they added a new drag and drop feature.
That's good. Oh man,
I like it. And we just luckily this was at the end of the show, so we didn't lose too many people.
We'll never get sponsored by United, so that's fine.
You can follow
if you watch the video backwards, it's a very nice story about a couple officers who help an Asian man sit in a seat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Anyways, you can follow me on Twitter. At Mike Warner. I want to get some more trouble than we already get into. All right, that's what it comes down to, people. If you're being really sensitive about it, then I apologize. I really do. We're trying to be as knowledgeable as we can about the game and give you guys some insight. But at the same time, we have to have a little fun, too. And we have an explicit tag. So we already know, you have to know coming into this, that we're going to say some pretty bad things sometimes. We don't mean to. We try to rein it in a bit, but I promise you, it's all in good fun. We're never serious about any of it. Anyways, with that said, reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. You can check out anything I write on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. You can check out the main show on Mondays, as well as all of the other shows that we do during the week every single day. Might I add, please continue to rate and review the shows. Again, we will be handing out some free FWFB swag to one random chosen winner. So make sure to please, again, rate and review the show and everything. Comment on the site as well. We have a lot of really nice articles on the site that we like to promote and get some kind of talk and feedback on. Join the Facebook page, all of that stuff. And also read my stuff on baseballhq.com. I have a daily matchups piece that comes out every single Saturday that helps you out with pitching and DFS and such. So check it all out. For Andy, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening, and keep on grinding. Every night.